Mike said it'll take 3 or 4 minutes. So, let's see, what should we do here? What do we, I think I would like to wait to get that set up, if that's okay with everybody.
Right. We can do self-introductions.
Yes, that would be nice. Yeah, there do seem to be some new names on the list. So what we'll do, everyone is over here in the chat. We have 14 people online right now in the chat. And so what we can do is, as Peter said, we'll kind of start a little introduction round. If you just say your name, we'll be going down the list from top to bottom that you can see over in the members side of the chat window, and just give your name and a kind of a brief summary of where you're at, where you're from, and kind of your interest, particularly in today's topic. So, Ali Obaidi, if you'd like to begin, please.
Yeah, I'm Ali Obaidi. I'm from MITRE Corporation. Some of the work that we do for our sponsors are related to both the financial systems and the basically through Treasury and other government agencies. So I'm quite interested in this topic.
Okay. So next, Andrea. Okay. Moving on to Arona. Arona Gerber. Okay. Carl Maddox.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I guess I'm not on mute. So I'm from CheckMe. I have long time interest in everything semantics and registries and repositories and content management in general. Today I'm calling from MetLife Bank, and I'm interested in building all kinds of ontologies for all kinds of financial service activities. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Newman, we'll save you for the main part of the meeting. I'll give you an introduction there.
Okay.
David Eddy.
This is David Eddy. I represent myself from basically commercial software views. I've had a interesting presided at the collapse of the data dictionary metadata repository world. Wondering when it's going to revive. That's why I'm here. I have a long time fascination with simplistically what I would call good names. Being able to find what you're looking for. That's it.
Okay, thank you. And Arnie Santos says doesn't have a mic. Yes. Oh, there you go. Okay. So if everyone can see in the chat, and Arnie is a PhD student in UFES Brazil. His area of research is conceptual modeling and ontologies. Graham.
Graham Gell, I guess.
Okay. Ken, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Ken Vitlovsky. I'm at Northeastern University. I'm a professor there. I've been involved in the OOR since it first started, and I'm one of the co-chairs of OOR Architecture. Can you hear me on that? I got some echoes.
Among the noise, yes, we heard you. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Leo?
Hi, folks. I'm Leo Oberst. I'm from MITRE. Hi, Ali. I see you've joined. I'm glad. I've been focused on ontologies and semantic technology for a whole long time, nearly 20 years now, and very interested in OOR, and also especially for this new application area, which is finance.
Financial
transactions.
Lin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm from China. I'm a laboratory technician in the hospital.
Hi, Lin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Lin has also been on the team with us doing the units of measure ontology.
Oh, okay.
At Cuomo's TC.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, yeah, welcome. Okay. So I'm Michael Gruninger at the University of Toronto. Work in have ontology design and analysis, and in particular working in context of the Open Ontology Repository project, of which we're kind of hosting today, working on the Common Logic Ontology Repository, CALORI. Mike Bennett, I'll save you, give you an introduction in just a moment when we begin the main session. Peter, would you like to say anything?
Peter Yim, one of the co-conveners of the OOR initiative, along with Leo Oberst and Mike Dean, and also a co-convener of Ontolog, or generally known as Ontolog Forum, where some of the collaborative work of several of the projects are being hosted.
And then Todd.
Hi, I'm Todd Schneider with Raytheon. I also work with Ken Bukowski on OOR, its architecture, and hopefully its realization to the fullest extent. So I'm certainly interested into what we can learn about the metadata. We understand that that's a real crucial issue, both in ontologies and other areas in the context of discovery. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Todd. Okay, so I think we're ready to begin. What we'll do is we'll have we have two speakers today. I will introduce shortly, and then after their presentations, we'll have kind of a wide open discussion. When we begin the discussion, if you can raise your hand in the chat session, is at the bottom. There's a little hand. Just click that, and that will help. That'll be the protocol for kind of having a queue of questions, and so we'll go with that. So, Peter, is there anything else before we start officially?
Shall we try to get everyone onto the GoToMeeting session? I only see Mike, four of us: Mike,
yeah.
Bennett, Graham, Michael, and myself. So there are 14 more.
Okay.
to get onto the GoToMeeting. And thank you very much, Mike Bennett.
So if everyone kind of looked at the chat session, you'll see that Mike Bennett posted a URL there. People just click on that URL, and that will start up very painlessly and efficiently. We'll start up the GoToMeeting window. Mike, are you going to be doing your your slides through the GoToMeeting viewer?
I was gonna ask that. I can do. I was assuming we would use the BNC hopper, but I can do it through this window. This is mainly here so that I can then hand it over to David Newman to show us the stuff live on screen. But if you would like me to do the GoToMeeting for my slides rather than using the BNC hopper, that might make things easier for everyone. What would you think?
Peter, any objections to that?
Either one. If we can get most people onto the GoToMeeting, then we might as well just use the shared desktop on the GoToMeeting.
Okay.
But Mike, when you for the sake of the recording, still call out your slide changes so that people who are listening later would get synced up.
And also
certainly will.
Yeah, and Mike Bennett's slides are available on the session page, PDF. You can download them from there as well. Okay, well, let's begin then. So just I'd like to welcome everyone to the March 6th session of the Open Ontology Repository. This is Metadata Workshop number 6. Today's topic is Metadata for Financial Ontologies, Ontology Metadata within the financial industry. For those who are new to our sessions, the OOR Metadata Workshop Series is devoted to exploring existing and proposed approaches to to the specification of metadata for ontologies, particularly in the context of ontology repositories, but not exclusively focused on that. We've had earlier sessions looking at relationships to OMV and the ontology metadata vocabulary and various other kinds of efforts. And so today our primary topic is ontology metadata within the financial industry. We have two speakers today, Mike Bennett, who is Director of Semantics and Standards at the Enterprise Data Management Council, which is an industry association in the financial services industry. We also have David Newman from Wells Fargo Bank. David serves as a senior architect in the Enterprise Architecture Group at Wells Fargo, and he has been involved in several efforts related to semantic technology and business ontologies. In particular, he's the representative of the Financial Services Technology Consortium at W3C. I think we will be beginning with Mike Bennett. We have some slides. You can get that through the GoToMeeting viewer, but you can also download the PDF from the main session page. So I think Mike will begin, and then at some point hand it over to David. So Mike.
Thanks, Michael. So I hope you can all hear me okay, and apologies for the slight hum. I'm just going to quickly run through what we've been doing, how we came to this, and give you some idea of what we're doing with the metadata. So I'm just trying to page down on GoToMeeting. There it is. So slide two, the overview. I'm going to talk about the FIBO metadata requirements, what our ambition was to implement them as OWL annotation properties, what the object management group are doing with their metadata proposals, how we've rendered that based on the OMG's work, using Dublin Core and SCOS, extending that for our provenance terms, some of our other metadata, and then I'll hand over to David for a look at some of the more long-range metadata that we'd like to do. So, next slide, slide three. I should add that FIBO is the Financial Industry Business Ontology. So this is a semantic model actually built using OWL constructs, but in a UML modeling tool using a profile and metadata standard called Ontology Definition Metamodel from the Object Management Group, which allows us to render OWL classes and object properties and so on using a UML tool. And so in doing that, we ended up creating a certain amount of metadata already, which we had originally assumed that once you generate RDF XML OWL from this repository, we would end up losing some of that. But then we were talking to Elisa Kendall and some of the others at the OMG, and they suggested, well, we should be able to take our existing metadata and render it as OWL annotation properties, so that way you don't get a loss of any of the information when rendering it into OWL. So as well as what we already have in FIBO, we have a certain number of other elements which we know we would like, which isn't in there yet, and some future ideas for additional metadata that we'd like to start adding as we go. So let's just start at the beginning. Next slide, what's in FIBO. This is just a couple of screenshots of the UML notes fields in the FIBO model in the current UML repository. And what we have there, initially we just put definitions in. You'll see in the, I've got two elements here just for illustration. One's an object property called debt security, has interest terms, debt security interest term set. So our naming style is, you know, domain, predicate, and range. And so for each of these, as for classes like Bond, we have the definitions, we have some further notes you'll see on the Bond entry, we have some review notes from 30th September 2010 with a little bit of history about where that definition came from. And then we started adding just a textual entry called Term Origin and another one called Definition Origin, along with a little tag for the consensus for the current review status. And so if you look at the top one there, you'll see that we have the term origin for this term is a thing called FIBIM. That's a draft version of a standard UML model called the Financial Industry Business Information Model, which is part of the ISO 20022 standard. And that has a term in it called interest change information. And that is the term which we looked at and essentially reverse engineered into what are the business semantics that this term represents. And so that's the term debt security has interest terms, debt security interest term set. So we've recorded the origin both in terms of the document or standard it came from and the name of that term in that standard. We also have a definition origin. And notice here that sometimes we end up adapting a definition because very often the written definition in a UML model or an XML schema will describe the data element or will describe the UML class or UML attribute rather than describing the real business thing. And sometimes it only requires a small tweak in the grammar, in the syntax of that definition to make a meaningful definition of the real thing. And, you know, for instance, we might have deleted the words field for or something like that. So then the definition origin there is FIBIM adapted, and that tells us that we got this term from FIBIM, that's the term it was, and we adapted the definition for that term, and this gives us our formal definition. Similarly with the bond, you'll see that the term origin is the Application of Financial Instruments Standard, that's ISO 10962. You'll see that we've been a bit informal with the way we've rendered these, because initially we were just extracting this stuff out to put into columns of a spreadsheet report, just using macros and things. We hadn't even thought about rendering this as formal metadata. Likewise, the definition origin here is actually a proof of concept project that we were doing at the time, and we eventually arrived at the definition from that proof of concept project, and so that's the definition origin there. So they're not always documents or standards, but in many cases they are. So this is what we had to begin with. Here's the stuff which we now need to try and put into our metadata. And for example, very simple thing, but in UML you have a field for the notes and you just put the definition in there, and in OWL there isn't a field for that. You have to actually have an OWL annotation to put that definition in. So even basic stuff like definitions we've needed to add metadata for in order to have a non-lossy transformation into OWL. So there we have our definitions, our additional narratives, and some provenance metadata, all very informal as it stands. Next slide. So to summarize the FIBO metadata requirements that we started with, we've got what's in the model now that you just saw, which is the definition, the provenance, also what we call archetypes, which is our own innovation, and also synonyms, because our initial requirement was we need terms, definitions, and synonyms. We don't care how you do it. We don't want to see the philosophy, but that's what we need. And, of course, OWL doesn't have an explicit synonym tag, so we added that as well, of course. We also, I think, will need things like classification facets. I'll describe that a little bit more later. And also, we have a section called global terms. This is a set of mid-level ontologies such as legal concepts, geographical concepts, financial accounting concepts, and so on. And wherever possible, we want to ground the semantics of those mid-level ontologies. So where we've extracted a concept to the most abstract thing that it is, for example, the term contract, which is the most general thing of which bonds and derivatives and so on are more specific instances of, we want to be able to take those terms, find industry ontologies from those areas, and cross-reference the semantics to that. So that's some semantic grounding or citation of those terms. And we've been doing some work with that on things like the REA ontology, for example, which is not in OWL and therefore requires a special citation construct. So those are the things we needed to add. And then there's more things, as I mentioned, that we'd like to add in the future. So now the next slide, the Object Management Group, or OMG, put forward some proposals for metadata in a spreadsheet. This is just a very small extract of that spreadsheet. And in fact, there are two tabs in that spreadsheet. There are ontology level metadata, which covers the same kind of scope as the OMV standard that we're all familiar with on this group. And then there's element level metadata, which OMV does not cover. And the bit I've extracted here happens to be the bit that includes our term origin and definition origin, along with other things like change notes, historical notes, and so on. And you'll see on the right-hand side there the proposals for what constructs should be used as the basis for these terms. Now, as you saw in the informal metadata, the term origin and definition origin are not so straightforward as to be just one element. So this was really an initial proposal for what the OMG architecture boards are putting together. So they've taken our requirements and a few more basic requirements like definition and display label and so on, and put together these proposals for metadata, because it makes sense that nothing about this is unique to financial services or to FIBO. We want to be able to use these as part of taking FIBO and formalizing it as a series of OMG standards. And so we want to work with the OMG architecture board first to make sure they've got all the terms that we need, and to add to our model any terms that need to be present in any OMG standard, such as having a formal definition metadata element. So next slide. So basically what we wanted to do then was use OWL annotation properties for all of the metadata that we need, and extend where possible existing terms from Dublin Core and from SCOS in particular, and also where relevant extends RDFS constructs like C also and so on. And in fact some of the SCOS ones are directly extensions of those. So we then would want to derive our FIBO specific metadata, like the term origin and definition origin, as extensions of Dublin Core. So Dublin Core has an element called source, and so since these are all semantic provenance concepts, they should all be done as extensions of Dublin Core source. And similarly, our textual annotations, such as definitions, some of those further notes that you saw, should all be renderable as extensions to SCOS. So that's the aim of what we were aiming to do. Next slide. So this is where we were working very closely with Elisa Kendall and others over at the Object Management Group, and she's done a set of profiles for Dublin Core and for SCOS, extending these the OWL annotation property constructs in the ODM profile and meta model. That's the ontology definition meta model. So we simply copied the small amount of that work that we needed for FIBO to create, firstly, a profile for Dublin Core, simply having Dublin Core source and Dublin Core identifier, so that we can extend these for our own provenance metadata. And similarly, on the next slide, which is rather more comprehensive, the SCOS profile, we have taken the part of that that we needed to create a profile for in our tools. So you see that SCOS has the concept of note, and then it has definition, editorial note, scope note, and so on, as subtypes of note. So note extends the OWL annotation property, and it does so, it subclasses from OWL annotation property and is rendered in the UML tooling as an association class. And similarly, the SCOS terms for alt label, pref label, hidden label are all extensions of RDFS label. And then we have further extensions to that, such as abbreviation and operational label, which are actually not in SCOS, but we've included them in the same profile. So that gives us the building blocks as profiles for rendering this stuff in our tool. Next slide, provenance extensions profile. So given the Dublin Core source element that you saw in the previous profile, we can now add those term origins and definition origins. And in fact, we have two elements for the term origin. So remember that we have the document that that term was in and the name of that in its document. So we have term original document and term original name. We've actually extended the term original document to term origin standard. So when it's actually a physical standard, we can put that. Then for the definitions, they either originate from or are adapted from those elements that that we saw. So that gave us our own local profile for that provenance stuff. And we did a similar thing with some of the other metadata elements that I mentioned. So the next slide, having created those profiles, we then imported them. So remember, this is all in the UML universe, so this may not all be relevant to the metadata as such, but just to show you what we did, we defined essentially the properties themselves. There's just a couple of them shown here for the textual stuff, and the same thing would be there for some of the other SCOS elements like scope notes and so on, where we define that the domain of these annotation properties is our thing, and the range is an RDFS literal. Now there's some tool-specific wrinkles which I won't trouble you with in order to enable us to actually put those RDFS literals into our model for instances of the metadata. But basically we define the metadata relationships as specific types of OWL annotation property, which are those subtypes that you saw as editorial note and definition and so on. And then instances of this, as you'll see, data will be rendered as facts or instances of these relationships. So next slide, the provenance property renditions, slightly more complex. I'm not going to go through the whole slide, but just to give you an idea, so in this tooling we've rendered object properties as blue lines. Ignore those are just here because they exist. The annotation properties we've rendered as green lines with these green little boxes next to them. That's because they are rendered as UML association classes, and that enables us to put the sub-property hierarchies in place. And so we have our definition origins pointing to documents. We have our term origins pointing to either a document or that subtype you saw, term origin standard, pointing to a standard. And so, again, we have each of these OWL annotation properties defined once, and then as we annotate the model, we'll do that as instances of these properties. So again, that's more tooling than anything, but it gives you some idea of how we've done this. Now what you'll notice is that the ranges of these are actual classes. These are OWL classes. They're coloured differently because we use this concept of an archetype, which is what is the type that something is. So grey is the archetype information, this greenish colour is published information, and so on. So in other words, the ranges of these annotation properties, unlike the textual ones, are not RDFS literals, but are in fact individuals, which are individuals of the type document or standard or whatever. So that's how we've dealt with the term and definition origins. Next slide. So just to recap then, the FIBO provenance metadata is the term origin, which is really two things, the standard and the name of that term. the definition origin, which is either the definition origin or definition adapted from. So that's how we've more formally rendered the informal textual metadata that you saw before. Next slide. So in order to support that, as I mentioned, the ranges of these annotation properties that we put in the top of our model are either RDFS literals for definitions and notes and so on, or they're standards or documents. And those are real things. A document is a kind of information construct which is actually real. It's not just some data design element. So where these are real things, we use terms that mostly already existed within the ontology, and we've extended some of those where we needed to. And there's a bit of work to do on that. So if you see the next slide, our standards and documents ontology, this needs work. We partway through dealing with how we relate the formal document of a standard from the standard and the standard body or standard setter. We have an acronym for the standard. We need to figure out, do we subclass this for XML and UML schemas, XML schemas and UML models? So, for example, the FIBIM model is a UML model. In the derivatives world, most of our terms come from the FPML model, which is an XML schema. So we've got a bit of work to do on that. You'll see we've got draft ISO standard, because this is not a full mapping to a current version of something. That's another thing which David will be talking about. This is us identifying where we got the terms from. And the terms that we were looking at when we introduced most of our terms for tradable securities in particular was this thing we call FIBIM, which is, to give it its full name, is ISO TC68 SC4 Working Group 11, document number N12, version 3.2. We need to put that somewhere, but you get the idea. So that's then the beginnings of an ontology which allows us to put in the ranges of those annotation properties. So the next slide, I won't spend much time on this one, the archetypes. This is our own innovation. This is where we use something that is very like a UML stereotype, but with the important difference that it is also part of the model. It doesn't live at a different level of abstraction. It's actually ancestral to the elements of that archetype. So where you saw some of those things that are different colors, those represent the archetypes such as contract, document, published document, and so on. And so if we're to have a completely non-lossy transformation into OWL, then that also needs to be rendered as OWL annotation properties. So in a similar way that we did with the textual metadata, where the range was an RDFS literal, which the text would go in for definitions and so on, we identify that a particular class is itself an archetype, such as the class called contract or the class called information and so on, and use a type literal that is a Boolean with, again, some of that workarounds that I hinted at for the tool. And then for each other class that is of that archetype, it will have an of archetype relationship to that class that sits at the top of the hierarchy of kinds of things that it is. And that will use a UML dependency-based class to render it. Okay, so how do we then implement that? You've seen the actual individual OWL annotation properties, but the instances of them with which we decorate each of our classes and object properties, a bit of an issue with data type properties, but the instances of these will be what is effectively in OWL a fact. That is an instance of an OWL annotation property, so it's an annotation fact. And so we're rendering these using the dependency-based class so that each instance of Scott's definition and each instance of history note and so on is an instance of that OWL annotation property. And in fact, we put that dependency-based class in the profile to render in the model. Sorry, I forgot to call this slide. Yes, this is the implementation slide. So, next slide, example implementation. This is to give you some idea of how the whole thing ends up looking. So you'll see again these different coloured things which represent different archetypes, such as autonomous entity, legal entity, and organisation. And for each of these, we now have these green dotted lines, which are the instances of the OWL annotation property. So if you look at autonomous entity, there's a definition fact which points to an IDFS literal, which is definition. The actual written definition now lives in UML tag value, so that when that's extracted as OWL, it becomes the literal itself, the literal string that represents that. Likewise, editorial note for the further notes that you saw. And so this is how the annotations are rendered in the UML tooling. But as a result of this, when you generate OWL from this, all of these become OWL annotations and are not lost as part of the transformation. So you see their legal entity is an archetype, so there it has its archetype metadata and so on. So, next slide. What else? That was just to cover what's already in the model that we needed to do, complete with a few shortcuts to formalize everything in our model as part of the OMG standardization process, so that you can get a full OWL rendition of this. The things that we started to look at but haven't tried to complete yet is classification facets. And this is an interesting one. It's not really time to go into it now in detail, but just essentially the ability, when things are classified in multiple ways, to be able to formally identify a particular facet and say, yep, this is, say, a cash flow subclassification of securities, or this is, you know, if you take derivatives, you can divide them into swaps, options, forwards, which are contract types, or you can divide them into commodities, rates, FX, and so on, which are underlying or asset types. And so there are multiple ways of classifying things. And so we want to be able to label those and ultimately be able to extract single inheritance taxonomies for those. So that's very much in the future. Next slide, and then I'm done. So that's just the basic stuff that we needed, plus the stuff we would like to do for classification facets. But a couple of other things we'd like to do is be able to map, rather than just showing the original provenance of where we got a term from, we want to be able to go back to the latest version of ISO 20022 and its FIBIN model, and the latest or a particular version of FPML and so on, and do a full mapping using similar metadata to what we've seen for the origins. But of course they're not origins, and so they won't extend Dublin Core source, they'll extend something else. And also there's a lot of potential, which David will now talk about, on being able to show metadata that links particular elements of information to rules. So, you know, if there's a CFTC rule that applies to a particular derivative element like a swap, we want to be able to add the metadata that refers to those. So with that, I'm going to hand the controls over to David Newman to show us the stuff that's on his screen. Give me a second. And David, it's all yours.
I have a PowerPoint slide. Is that visible?
I can hear you now, and I can see your slide.
Okay, great. Okay, so let me first talk a bit about our vision. Probably not much more to add after your presentation, Mike. So this is a slide that, you know, basically shows up on the upper left, the representation of legal entity identifiers through our ODM model. And it depicts a particular ontology element and some of the metadata subset of the metadata that we would like to collect for each ontology element as well. The vision here is that in today's world, the richness of metadata is typically not integrated within the schema itself. Outside of perhaps an XML schema, you may have some one-liner annotations, which would represent some textual node or definition of the XML element. Outside of that, typically you need to utilize additional tools that are typically separate from the schema or the source schema. So you would have a third-party tool typically to weave together the additional metadata that you wish to integrate along with the content of your schema. And this, of course, is a problem in terms of reconciliation and rationalization of the meaning of our data elements in our institutions, typically causing tremendous expense to the organization because there's frequently cost overruns due to reconciliation and understanding problems at the level of the business analysts and at the level of the developers. And a lot of that, while we have good metadata, we don't have that metadata integrated in as richly as we can with semantics to the schema itself. So our intent was to be able to weave this information tightly with the schema. And so on the lower left, you could see some more rich information that we could associate with an element. But, you know, that is not enough. The intent is to have this information represented semantically so that the metadata information can be accessed itself semantically, both via semantic or hyperlinks, as all OWL elements have a URI itself, so that it could be navigatable, and that it could be navigatable to remote sites. So our vision is that the publisher of the ontology standard would host a website that would be addressable either through a Sparkle endpoint where the information is published as linked open data, or in addition to that, it may be represented in a portal by that publisher so that the information is accessible, it's queryable as well. So we believe this is the direction that we need to go, both from a industry standard point of view where the information is published through linked open data, or internally within the organization itself where the information may be published internally through the enterprise's own internal linked open data cloud. So this is something that we believe is a prerequisite for financial standards. And this next slide just provides some, states what I just said a moment ago, that we want to capture rich information about data. We want to source it to the regulatory authority that might have a set of rules that require institution to adhere to a particular data standard. And so where that element in the ontology reflects a regulatory rule, we would have
a annotation that speaks to that particular regulatory rule that will potentially allow for a URL to be published to have a direct link to that regulatory rule, as well as having links to other sources where the origin of that ontology element might be based upon, as well as other standards. So in the case of derivatives, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association publishes an XML schema called FPML, Financial Product Markup Language, and there are equivalent elements represented in XML schema that often served as either the source or origin of some of the elements in FIBO, or are, if not, their equivalent elements. So we want to point to those as well. We could also see organizations that have elements that are not necessarily tied to regulatory requirements, but are tied to internal line of business requirements. There will be opportunities for an organization to specify metadata annotations to point to the line of business requirement itself, so that we can show the linkage between the elements and the business requirements. And ultimately, this then positions us to tie elements to business processes. And you can see how this can begin to weave a broad web of interconnected information within the institution itself. That would be extremely valuable. And again, having knowledge, as much knowledge baked into the ontology as possible, would give tremendous lift to organizations, reduce huge amounts of expense due to misunderstanding and miscommunication. And so having the web of information provided through these annotations, I think, is a strategic direction for organizations to pursue. So how much more time do we have on this call?
The session is an hour and a half, so we have 35 more minutes.
Okay.
But, of course, we want to have plenty of time for discussion. So,
In a few minutes, then, let me show you a bit about what we've done from an operational point of view. And this is very, very embryonic. So we're actually just starting to build out some of the vision specified in Mike's ODM representations to actually realize it in an operational ontology. So what you're seeing here is a part of our proof of concept work in creating an operational ontology for interest rate swaps. And so at the top level, let me just bring it up a little here. So as you see here, this is Protégé. It may be very familiar to you. So we're beginning to start to weave in for some of the elements, some basic annotations. So under contract, we have definition, which will provide the basic textual definition that came out of our ODM model. Definition is basically a subclass of SCOS definition. And let me just expand this a little to show you a bit of the annotation work we've done. Actually, I could probably do it here. Okay, so we've created a an ontology, at the moment we're calling ontology metadata, which has sourced in Dublin Core and SCOS, and we've created a set of links to some other ontologies that we've created. So I'm just going to show some of the annotation subproperties that we built. So Mike talked about Dublin Core source a number of times, and so we've created annotation subproperties from Dublin Core source, adapted from definition origin, term origin, term origin standard, is identified by, represents a URL or the URI for the ontology element, and so on and so forth. You can see some additional governed by standard, a subclass of is defined by. RDFSC also, we've created some other related subclasses, and so on and so forth. So this is still also very provisional and very embryonic in our work. But the intent here is to allow the user to navigate through the ontology, and meaningful annotations will pop up. So a swap contract is a subclass of a contract, and so it'll have a definition, will have a an equivalent to, which represents, in this case, a swap contract has a equivalent element in the ISDA FPML swap XML schema. And, you know, this is another object. Unfortunately, at the moment, Protégé, we discovered, does not allow navigation for objects within annotations. And this is a need that we'll have, and a request to the Protégé development community to remediate that somehow, so that we can begin to drill into these objects and navigate across to see what the content is. So let's see, where was that? I'll try to find that. Well, I'll have to search around to see where that is. So that is the issue we want to work through, is to be able to click on this so we don't have to search across the ontology to find it. So there's also a, in addition to a definition, within the ontology, we have additional notes. So a further note just gives some additional commentary. We also point to the actual URI of the ontology element. The term origin is the EDM Council. And we also may point to another related concept in the ontology that would be useful. When we have a swap contract, it's useful to read up about a swap transaction. Now we drill down further into a subclass of swap contract, and we have definition is identified by. Here is another annotation to see a regulatory rule, and the regulatory rule, the CFTC rule 45, let me see if I can find that, is another object that, here it is. So there's a some additional information within this rule and definitions about the class that we've, or the element that we've captured some information from. And then we have some other related descriptions. So that's all I had to show right now for the operational ontology. Once we can remediate that issue with Protégé and be able to navigate to to the actual objects, any annotations. It'll be much more robust. I have not tested this yet in other ontology editors like TopRaid to see whether it may work directly in TopRaid or in other other editors out there. So that's all I had. I'll turn it back to Michael and open it up for questions.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. That was really great. Now, what I did, I actually took a few screenshots during your demo. Would it be okay with you if we incorporated those into the meeting notes today?
Yeah, that would be fine, just with the caveat that probably a lot of this is going to change.
No, that's fine. That's research. okay, so let's see. So what we can do now is kind of open it up for other questions. There have been a few questions that have been addressed in the chat, but I think at this point we can just open it up to like any kind of question. The protocol it would be to, in the chat window, just click on the little hand that's at the lower right-hand corner of the chat window. We can use that to do the moderation. So are there anybody that wants to kick off the question session? Otherwise, I'll use the convener's prerogative and start off. Oh, no, okay, so Todd, go ahead.
Star 7, Todd. Maybe your own phone is muted.
Okay, just actually one little tiny point here. Mike Bennett just indicated that since Elisa Kendall's online right now, we might want to ask her if she has any comments to start off with, particularly since she was looking at a kind of from OMG's vision. For the metadata. Elisa, do you want to make any comments right now?
I need Peter to unmute me.
Nope, no, unmute it. We can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. So what Mike and David showed was a starting point for some work that we're doing at OMG in general to provide much better a metadata support for any and all modal files submitted as part of a standards process. There's been a great deal of discussion over the last, I can't tell you how many years, about doing something like this. And I joined the architecture board last year and immediately realized when people started throwing XMI files to me to look at and review that there was virtually no metadata in them at all, not even descriptions of all of the elements. And I was appalled. The ontologist in me poked out, and all of my feathers were ruffled, et cetera, as you all might expect. And I said, wait a minute, you can't tell what's changed between from one, you know, file version to another. You can't talk about why you made these changes. You can't. There's no capacity in XMI, per se, out of the box to say, you know, what's new or changed or what people should be concerned about or whether these things are backwards compatible and so forth. And we're really, really good at OMG at doing document-level change management. So all the specifications have a boatload of change bars, and there's a whole process about that. And the same is not true of the electronic files. So Pete Rivet and I had been talking about this. Pete's with the company called Adaptive, also on the architecture board with me. He had been beating the bushes for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years before I joined the architecture board and started jumping on his bandwagon. But the bottom line is I came up with a spreadsheet that was a starting point for some of the metadata based on information that I've used over the years for ontology development, but that includes some number of elements from Dublin Core and SCOS, and extends that with some additional elements from ISO 11179 and ISO 10087. It's not compliant with either of the ISO standards at this point, but we're looking at moving it there in order to formalize something for OMG. In the meantime, I think some of Mike's slides had at least a partial view of some of the extensions that we've made to SCOS, in particular to support the work that he's doing on this FIBO ontology, but that we would use at OMG in general for the most part because we think that the metadata is extremely important for any and all of our specifications. And we're actually moving, in some cases, towards generating parts of the specifications out of the models as opposed to copying and pasting pictures out of the models but not using the electronic versions to validate the specs. Some of our specifications most recently have already been developed using that paradigm, meaning that, you know, the boilerplate stuff at the front can't be generated out of the model, but anything describing model content certainly can be. And so we're kind of starting to eat our own dog food with UML 2.4 and UML 2.5. Several of the AB members who've been participating in that work, including Steve Cook from Microsoft, Pete Rivett, some folks from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and a number of others have been working together. Ed Seidowitz from Model-Driven Solutions. He works with Corey Cassenave, who some of you have met. They've all started working on some scripts and other things that allow us to generate the specs out of the UML models. And so given the metadata, that would dramatically improve their ability to do so. So we're all putting our thinking caps together and are working on this fairly rigorously. And so what you're seeing in terms of the partial spreadsheet and discussion that Mike showed you and the draft work that David showed you are bits and pieces of that starting to emerge and getting tested in some of our near-term specifications.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of tapestry that's being woven here. It's nice to see a lot of the synergy that's going on between the different groups. Leo, you have a question.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Mike has mostly answered it. I just wondered about his use of archetypes. Because I've come across this in healthcare, and I wondered if it was similar, and I think it actually is. And I'm not sure if it's related to, the UML notion. It's kind of like a prototype, I guess. But it sounds like it is. And Mike, just to clarify, you use it as a kind of necessary instance, is that correct? If Mike's on.
Yes, that's correct. Basically, what we looked at was having defined all these things as our classes. We wanted to define everything in terms of the simplest kind of thing that it is. And so we literally just took the dictionary concept of an archetype and thought, well, that's pretty much what it is. It's rendered using UML stereotype, but unlike a stereotype, it lives as part of the model and is ancestral to everything of that type. So, for example, if you take, say, a bond or a credit default swap or any other security or derivative, they're all basically contracts. So we said, well, what is the simplest kind of thing that is a contract? The thing which, if you took one more property away from it, it would not be a contract. So what are the necessary facts that must always apply? Well, it must have some jurisdiction, it must have two parties, it must contain contractual terms, and so on. And then everything that's a contract inherits those terms and also either extends or specializes or restricts those terms in order to say what kind of contract that particular one is. So, for example, a written contract is a kind of contract, a bilateral contract is a kind of contract, and so on. And once we come up with that idea, We started with things like events. You know, if a thing has a time and a place, it's an event, and if it doesn't, it isn't. And then decided, well, let's just apply that to everything. And that allowed us to create quite a rich visual color coding for the kinds of elements that we find in our models.
Okay, but I mean, a contract you couldn't have modeled as just a class with, you know, either necessary or sufficient properties defined on it, and then the other contracts as subclasses?
Yes, we've done exactly that. So it is slightly redundant because that's already in place. You know, because it's an archetype, not a stereotype, it is ancestral to all the classes of things which are a contract. But by defining it or identifying it as an archetype, it's kind of a visual clue. It's a pity there isn't tool support for it. Maybe one day there will be able to say, okay, you're dragging a contract into this diagram, you better recognize its necessary facts. But at the moment, it's, as with stereotypes, it's really just a visual shorthand for identifying what it is. But what you've just described, the necessary facts, are all there. So, you know, in a way, you could ignore the archetype and have a perfectly good OWL ontology, which is why we weren't originally going to add it to the metadata, but now we do, so that everything that's in there also appears in the OWL ontology.
Okay, good. Yes, okay, thanks a lot.
Peter.
Let's see if Todd could speak, because he had some phone problem.
Okay, Todd? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I think I forgot to do the unmute for the conference. But in any case, my question was for David, and I was just sort of curious as to what you meant or entailed by navigate in Protégé, or was it something, a navigation outside of Protégé that you were concerned with?
Yes, so I was referring to navigation within Protégé. So any element in the ontology, once you click upon it, you can basically, if you click on a class, you can see its equivalent class and or a member, you could an individual, you could see its data and object properties and iterate through those. So that's what I was referring to as navigate. Unfortunately, in the annotations tab, classes, individuals rather, are non-navigatable. And so that's all I was referring to. It's a need that we have.
Okay.
So Peter, did you have a question?
Yes. Yes. One of the things that I was looking towards getting from this session is maybe a comparison of the approach OMG/EDM Council is taking on metadata versus what OR has been trying to do, mainly using OMV as a basis and extending from it. I mean, I can see I had this exchange on the chat with Elisa to see if she can share with her magic spreadsheet, which I now realize is partially shown on Mike Bennett's slide deck, slide number 6. My question, I guess, to Elisa, Mike, and David is, did one of you or someone on your team happen to have made comparisons between your approach versus how OMV has implemented that?
Yes. Can I answer?
Oh, please.
So we actually did a full spreadsheet comparison, sort of a metadata crosswalk between ISO 11179, the Global Information Locator Service, which came from the U.S. government years ago and is used on all the sort of InfoGov sites for the U.S. We compared with 11179 and ISO 10-87. We compared with some work that JPL had done internally on metadata. We compared with standards that are used in a couple of our clients, and we also use Dublin Core and SCOS. We also looked at some of the explanation support metadata that things like Inference Web use. And what we realized for the OMG was that we were looking primarily to cover the set of metadata that was specific to any model, any UML model in particular that we would want to either register in a registry or manage as a specification on the OMG site, first at the model level, which a number of those standards did not cover very well, although the things that we have in our metadata draft proposal do include things that OMV and Protégé in general and other the bio portal and other things include. But we wanted more than that. And there were a number of things that were specific to OMV that are not necessarily needed for other kinds of models that we manage at the OMG, but a lot was lacking in OMV for element-specific metadata that we want to manage for OMG. So examples include some of the myriad dependencies that we want to track between specifications in particular and between the modules and model elements that make up those specifications, some of the more rigorous change management kinds of metadata that we want to have in order to show not only what the changes are in a particular model, but be able to generate change bars in a specification. I mean, those are things that OMV doesn't really care about. OMV has a lot of statistical information about a particular instance of a particular ontology, but if you're generating that ontology from a UML model, the kinds of statistics that you get by running a classifier over them to see that they're logically consistent may or may not be identical every time you run the reasoner or across reasoners. And so it wasn't clear to us that we really cared to keep track of that stuff. What was more important to us was whether or not the testing was done, and possibly with what reasoners, but essentially that the model is logically consistent is more important to us than tracking how many classes it has and things like that. So the bottom line is that some of the kinds of metadata that you would track given an OMV approach were of interest to us, and we've generalized some of those things so that we can track the difference between the modeling paradigm, which might be an ontology, might be a data model or schema, might be a software model, might be something else, with the language that's the target language from a UML modeling perspective, which could be UML or could be ontology different definition metamodel or could be SysML or could be IMM, and then the exact serialization of some of those model implementations, which in the case of OWL might be Manchester syntax, might be RDF XML serialized OWL and so forth. So we have some of that kind of metadata that we're looking at including, which does kind of map to what was done in the OMV, but again, the OMV was very focused on the specific set of OWL ontologies, not on more generalized model metadata.
Yes, thank you for the very comprehensive response. So given that experience, any lessons we should learn from you on having made that comparison when we construct our metadata for OOR?
So one of the things I think is really important is to understand the use cases for the metadata. For us at OMG, you know, specification generation automatically is something that not everybody cares about. but we do. And so, you know, OMG specification metadata will include some metadata that allows us to do that. That may be a special case that we have, but other people don't. So from an OOR perspective, what I would want to do is first be able to register any kind of ontology that people are commonly developing, ranging from common logic to OWL to possibly other things. And you have variations on a theme like we do at the OMG. So for common logic, you're going to have different dialects that you care about, CLIF or IKL or maybe conceptual graphs if you're talking with people who are working with John Soa and other folks like that. I mean, so you're going to have variations, so you need to track what that variation is. There may be reasons why you track how it's serialized, whether it's an XML representation, whether it's a Lisp-like representation, and so forth. There, you know, so things like that you might care about, and as our metadata solution evolves, we'll try to share more of it with folks on this community. But I wanted to wait until we had more consensus at OMG before we put any stakes in the sand, because things tend to take on a life of their own.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's see. Oh, Todd, do you have another question?
Am I unmuted?
We hear you.
Oh, excellent. I want to make a reply to Elisa's comment about the use cases. For OOR, use cases are a good place to start, but they're not the ending state. One of the problems that we will run into for sure is that people will need additional information or think of clever new ways how to use the existing information. So one of the things we need to strive for is a very flexible capability. Certainly we have to start somewhere, and the use cases will help with that. The challenge will be to allow the introduction of new items in the metadata that can be dynamically, instantiated throughout the operating capability.
Okay. So I have a question. So one of the things that we've been looking at in OR, I guess one of the things that I've mainly looked at is metadata that talks about the relationships between ontologies. And so I was just wondering, to what extent does the work presented today kind of consider relationships between ontologies, or is it more focused on the relationships between ontologies and other knowledge sources, with the emphasis being on provenance?
Can I answer that?
Okay, and then I'll chip in as well.
So at OMG, we care tremendously about dependencies, both across models and within them. And those dependencies can range from importing or referencing another ontology to referring to the source document for any particular set of definitions or the terms themselves or what have you. We care about both. And so the metadata that we're developing is designed to support both kinds of things, and that's why you see in the work that Mike showed some of the links to things like the term origin and the definition origin, because we believe those may be different depending on the definition or the term that you're looking at for a particular set of concepts. And especially when, for something like FIBO, they might come from multiple specifications and you're trying to bridge some gaps. And a particular community has adopted some set of terminology for some purpose, then you want to say why. So those definitions are really important for FIBO, but the interdependencies across specifications are important for model transformation at OMG. They're important for consistency checking if you have a stack of sort of an ontology stack or a set of modules that you care about. We're trying to modularize the work that Mike is doing as an example so that people could conform to pieces of it but not the whole thing. understanding conformance points is also really critical for us. So things like that we are trying to address. Again, the fur is still flying, and no dust has settled, so it's unclear where exactly we will land on the final version of metadata, but at least you can know that it's important to us.
And if I could also add to that, we showed you the provenance of the semantics of the concepts based on what we actually recorded at the time as being the origin of a term, and that's very similar to but distinct from actual overall mapping. So some of the stuff that David's looking at, where we might want to do a full mapping of, say, our loans ontology to the MISMO loans XML standard, and so that will require similar metadata, but of course it won't have Dublin Core source as its parent term, because it's not about the origin of the term anymore, it's about a cross-reference. And so there's a lot of that kind of stuff to explore, and particularly in our mid-level ontologies, some of the work we've been making reference to is not in OWL. If it is, of course, we just use OWL equivalent class. But if it isn't, then we have to use some kind of citation so that we're taking particularly these archetypes that we've defined and grounding them in some external ontology, such as the REA ontology for transactions or the UNFAO ontology for countries and stuff like that. So that's kind of where we're going with that. And then we're also thinking about very application-specific or industry-specific requirements, such as being able to map to regulatory requirements. So is this element relevant to a registration requirement, a listing requirement, etc., which again is what David showed you a little bit of in what we're exploring with that. So these are all different use cases, and what we did right from the beginning is really package these kinds of metadata, as you saw, into separate profiles for separate kinds of metadata, so you may be able to use one and not another, for example.
So just as a follow-up to that, so you can imagine how, say, Fiverr would be using using other ontologies to take handle some of the other concepts. You know, so there's a lot of temporal concepts, just for example, within Fiverr. So how would it, say, you know, be able to kind of say, well, I want to use, you know, OWL time instead of what's coming out of OMG, or vice versa? Like, you know, because there's a date and time ontology being worked on within OMG. So do you kind of foresee the metadata handling that sort of relationship, or would you see Fiverr just basically saying, you know, kind of swallowing whole some other kind of time ontology, so it effectively becomes a module within Fiverr?
That's a very good question. With all of these mid-level ontologies, we pretty much had to create our own stuff and then go shopping for suitable ontologies. I mentioned UNFAO. It's a very small part of what we needed for country concepts and is not necessarily designed with that kind of reuse in mind. A more robust and better example, as you mentioned, is the OMG's date-time vocabulary. So we fully expect to take our current, essentially temporary terms and replace them with and or extend from the OMG's date-time terms. I can't see an obvious way of disentangling our ontology from those terms that we put in the global terms section, so the shared semantics. What we're doing is, for each kind of concept we need to refer to, we're doing as much as we can to find the best and most widely referenced ontology. So in the same way that linked data folks will often refer to friend of a friend and, you know, Dublin Core, of course, you know, what is a set of ontologies that everybody agrees that everybody can look at? And well, I mentioned the REA ontology, for example, is getting a lot of traction in that. XBRL for financial accounting terms, which, by the way, is not in OWL, but clearly represents some semantics. And so in many cases, we're situating the semantics of those non-OWL terms within our archetype framework, and then, as you say, using them wholesale. So yeah, that's an interesting area to look at.
Okay, I just have one last question. Actually, I guess Dave Newman's left already, but I noticed that there was a one-day session called Demystifying Financial Services Semantics in New York next week.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be in New York on the 18th, not the 13th. I won't be able to go to that. But I was just wondering, since Mike, you have a presentation there, and I think Elisa's on the panel there. What do you kind of see coming out of that? That I guess it's called a conference, but.
Yeah, it's a joint EDM Council and OMG event, so we're showcasing the kind of stuff we've been working on. We've got panels from the OMG, we've got SDVR, we've got David Newman presenting his stuff, we've got me describing the FIBO stuff, and a lot of, you know, high-level business folks describing the problems that we're there to solve. So, yeah, do come along if you can. It's something like $300 or something, so it's not too punitive, and we're delighted to have people come along to that.
Okay. I guess just one last point here. I'm kind of using my prerogative here. If you could maybe just post the best link to FIBO, just so we could kind of keep that in the archive, so you could just post a link to that in the chat, that'd be great.
Sure. Yep, there's a downloadable version of it. It's currently only in Enterprise Architects. As part of the FIBO standardization process within the OMG, it will be available as tool-neutral XMIs and ALs, but that's waiting on me finishing populating the rest of that instance metadata that you saw, and then a lot of people are going to do a lot of clever stuff, and then that will be available. But the link I post will allow you to see it in its current Enterprise Architect instantiation.
Okay, cool. Okay, are there any other questions? So, like I mentioned before, I took a few, how many did I take? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I took 5 screenshots of David's demo earlier, screenshots of the Protégé window. So Peter, I'll send them to you and we can figure out how to put them up on the website. Also, I'll ask Dave later on to maybe send us the 2 PowerPoint slides that he presented.
I took screenshots of the 2 slides.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, I'll add all these together and make a post.
Okay, so I'll send you the other ones that I snapped.
Great.
Okay. Well, if there aren't any other questions, thank you very much. To Mike Bennett and David, deeply grateful that you were able to share with us the work that's going on within financial area with ontologies and metadata. And definitely, there are a lot of good connections here. They definitely need to we need to follow up on. So, if there aren't any other points, then I'd like to welcome everyone who attended. And keep posted for future metadata workshops within the Open Ontology Repository endeavor. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.